So hi, I'm Tom Talpe with Microsoft. This is my first Samba XP, and I think it might be a good idea for me to introduce myself a bit. I'm going to give a talk about a new protocol initiative that we're actually now ready to kick off. But the talk is fairly high level because I'm going to focus mostly on the project, the way we propose to actually do this. There's a lot of technical material below it that I've actually chosen not to give. And the purpose of the talk is really to motivate you and give you an idea of where it's going. But I'll hint a little bit at the end as to what the content will be. So my background is in networking and networked file systems, where I've worked for many years. I contributed to NFS primarily. NFS v3, v4, and v4.1documents were all contributed, I made contributions to. So NFS v3 goes back to the 1989 time frame, so 20 years in the NAS business. I'm just 1 year at Microsoft. I joined just about a year ago, and I'm applying the same techniques that I've applied in NFS over the years to SMB, and it's a very, very interesting space for me. So I'm really happy to be here. Another thing that you might be interested in my background is that I have a fairly good background in the Linux kernel. I contributed to the NFS client in Linux, and if you look in NetSun RPC, XPRT, RDMA, you'll find about 3,000 or 4,000 lines of mine implementing the NFS RDMA client in Linux. I also worked closely with the RDMA infrastructure and with the NFS RDMA server. So I know a few things about Linux file systems, networked file systems in particular, and I hope to bring them to bear here. So I'm looking forward to it, and I hope you will be too. So first let me make a problem statement. SMB2 is the file sharing protocol for modern Windows operability. SMB2 is spoken by Windows, as you probably know, since Vista, since the 2006 timeframe, spoken by the 2008, 2008 R2, and Windows 7 implementations. It's really the forward-looking SMB protocol family, protocol for Windows. But one thing it lacks is POSIX semantics, right? It's a Windows file-sharing protocol, and it exposes Windows semantics. It does not expose POSIX semantics. POSIX, however, was supported by earlier extensions made to SIFS and SMB back in the early 2000s. Those extensions were published in 2002. In addition, transport encryption is not supported by SMB2. There's very strong authentication and signing, but there's no facility for encryption or for even negotiating it. So those are seen by us as gaps in the SMB2 protocol, things to close over time. It does a very good job at what it was designed for, but it can do a lot more. So the goals of what I'm about to describe are to enable SMB to SMB2 heterogeneous migration. Heterogeneous is the important word here, right? We want Unix to use this protocol as well as Windows. This will broaden SMB2 interoperability, right? Many more machines will be able to use it on a daily basis. And it'll also strengthen SMB2 security, which is a very strong goal of ours. Prior work in this space is important to acknowledge and to describe. In the 2002 timeframe, SNIA, the Storage Networking Industry Association, had a number of standards initiatives that it had more or less started and sponsored. And one of them was an attempt to standardize SIFS, because Microsoft had not done so at the time. We'd published the IETF draft, but stopped working on it for various reasons. And SNIA decided to pick up the flag and document it for us, if you will. And part of that effort was a set of extensions that became to be known as the Unix and Mac or Macintosh extensions. And they were published as appendices to the SNIA SIFS technical specification. You can still find this spec at that URL if you're interested. The document's freely downloadable. I wouldn't recommend implementing from it. I would recommend implementing from MS-SIFS that Chris Hertel and is going to talk about after me, actually. But it contains a lot of historical information, and it's a useful document, historically for sure. But anyway, the Unix and Mac extensions are very interesting to it because they were the initial attempt to do this. So the prior approach, this SNIA effort, used a so-called carve-out in the SMB information levels. They were from Xerox 200 through 2FF. Only a few, like five, I think, were actually used. But there was a reserved carve-out that was promised not to be used. There was additionally a single bit in the server capabilities that was returned on the negotiation. On the capability negotiation, it would return a bit called cap under Unix. Cap under Unix didn't actually promise to do everything, but it said, I might know a few Unix extensions that you might have found written in this non-standard, but otherwise well-published standard. So it was a hint that you might try an additional protocol exchange. There was also a related set of Macintosh extensions. If it's called Macintosh, I guess you know how old it is and what it owes its lineage to. It took a similar approach, but didn't actually have the negotiation. It just had the reserved information levels. Okay, so problems with the previous approach. A carve-out is always problematic. It works only between well-matched peers, right? It's basically a private protocol that's piggybacked on the master protocol. So it works only if the two peers pretty much already agree. It's not readily extensible, right? It's just a carve-out. It was just wedged in there. And it leads, inevitably, and in this one certainly did, to selective implementation. And I guess I will point out this one right here. It's not extensible to, this sentence, I'm sorry, I'm reading forward. These extensions may not be implemented by all Unix systems. So right in the spec, whenever you see this kind of language in a spec, it's always a red flag, right? And sure enough, this red flag came true. It had very limited addressing of the needed requirements. There were a number of issues in the rename operations, and the carve-out couldn't solve them. So they wound up overloading an existing operation in these extensions, which is not really a very good idea. Finally, the extension is not extensible to SMB2. It was purely an SMB1 approach. So as a result, there was prior implementation. It's right there in Samba today, right? It's mixed. The implementation support is mixed. In other words, it's partial, and it's not implemented on some servers or in the same way on servers. There's really minimal common feature interoperation. Servers chose the ones that were convenient and ignored the ones that weren't convenient. So it's a very problematic environment to interoperate in. The result of the limitations are that clients are unable to count on server support, right? They don't know a priori whether a server will support some enhanced semantic that they want. So they're forced to reduce their expectations. They have to go down to some lowest common denominator that they're likely to encounter. And they're forced to reduce their functionality guarantees because even then, they aren't sure that it'll be available. It might be a generic server. It might be a server with limited implementation of the extensions. So I'm here to talk about a new protocol initiative. We actually started talking about this at least a couple years ago. And talked about it most recently at the SNIA Storage Developer. Actually, it was at the SMB. Was within the SMB Plugfest, not on the Storage Developer agenda. But we talked about an initiative that has finally matured into what I'm about to announce, basically. So we are today announcing a public collaborative effort to create a new protocol extensions for the SMB2 protocol to support POSIX and Unix behaviors. It's a public collaborative effort. This is something that I'm inviting folks to join, and I'm really looking forward to the Samba team or individuals or affiliated companies joining this effort. I hope that it's well accepted by you, and if it's not, please tell me and tell me why, and we'll fix it. We propose a lightweight, focused process. By focused, I mean that we're going to define our scope and we're going to try to keep it to that scope. But we're going to draw on the prior extensions and industry experience while we do it. So we're going to be very practical in this. We're not going to take a sheet of white paper. We're going to take our existing knowledge. And we intend to produce an open, published specification that's available for implementation industry-wide. So we'll provide certain guarantees about the content and the ability to take the content and innovate and implement to it. The specifications will be independent of the Microsoft Open Protocols document set, right? And that is, in particular, our MSSMB2 document. Actually, I didn't mention one of my roles at Microsoft is to own that document and all the other file sharing documents. There's about 21 of them total. And if you read any of the MSSMB, MSSMB2, or MSSIFs that Chris wrote, but now I own, and you're interested in discussing any issues with those documents at the bottom, talk to me. But I want to clarify, this is completely separate. We're going to refer to it, but we're not going to use it. We're not going to change it. So the new scope and approach, we're going to define scope, and we're going to define the approach we take to get there. The scope is to support POSIX, to support transport encryption, and to explicitly negotiate the behaviors that you can expect from the server on these in this regard. Okay, it's fairly tight, right? But we think it is substantial, significant, achieves our goals. The approach is we're going to use explicit reserved information levels. We're not going to carve out. We're going to define these things. And we're going to have ioctls and FS controls if required. I'm not sure we need them, but we're willing to do that if necessary. There's plenty of precedents for it. And I guess I'm repeating myself. It is independent of the MSSMB2 protocol set spec. It will make references into it, but we won't change that spec. That will define the core SMB2 protocol, and the extensions will define the extensions. Functional areas, protocol changes, we certainly expect protocol changes. The document and an effort will specify them. The new capabilities, the operations, all the details of the protocol. We will write a protocol spec with all the musts and shoulds and structure definitions and protocol exchanges. But we also expect, I expect at least, to be documenting server best practice. The sorts of things that you really ought to do that might be optional but are advisable. Or if you don't do them, these are the consequences. There are a number of understandings and practices that go along with the protocol itself that are key to actually making the protocol a success. And so I plan to capture those. I plan to capture those, I'm, as the project coordinator, I own the problem of doing so. We plan to use the experience heavily, right? I'm really looking forward to the Samba experience with implementing the existing Unix extensions. Which ones are key to capturing applications, right? What are the most important semantics, for instance, right? Give me the top 10 or whatever they are. And why and how in many cases, right? Wedging a Windows-based protocol onto a Unix-based system is always a challenge. So there are details, right? That you have learned already in the past. I'm not supposed to have screensaver on in this power mode. Restrictions. There are going to be restrictions as well, in addition to best practice. I certainly expect character sets to be a restriction, moving between Windows and POSIX file systems in particular. But the character set itself, reserved file names, all these kinds of things that are, if you will, outside the protocol, but really part of the protocol, right? So there's going to be quite a bit of knowledge to capture there. Improvements, protocol relationships, other things you need in order to do this well, right? Side protocols, other configurations, things like that. All definitely things to capture. So this is what we've identified as the scope so far. And we did this by analyzing requirements of the previous effort and by basically talking to Samba and other implementations and ask, you know, what did you really do? And so this is the list of things that we will specify. It's a committed list. Everything that's on this, we're prepared to move forward with. This is not a draft list. If it needs to be added to, that's great, but I just want to stress this is committed. Negotiation, as I said, but including the negotiation of the specific items below, right? Oops. All these things, did it again. All these things in here are, if you will, negotiable. And I would envision the negotiation as being selective here, if we choose it to be. We could also choose to make it all required. That's easy and probably the most interoperable. But all these things relate very closely to POSIX, except for the very one at the very bottom, which apparently is of strong interest to the Darwin folks, and not something supported by any other file protocol, to my knowledge. The file system case sensitivity is fairly obvious, and that's, if you will, a POSIX attribute. All the others are clearly POSIX attributes, things which are exposed by existing POSIX APIs, or the side effects like the rename of open files and unlink of files. The behavior of these operations are really very different from the Windows behaviors. These are all things that have significant implementation experience, which is a good thing. I'm a little worried about the second to last one, as I'll mention at the end. There's a lot hiding under that one. Question, Jeremy.
Sorry, there's just one more thing that's pretty important, and it's not a specific thing, although I can give you a specific implementation issue. What it is interactions between a client and server speaking the POSIX dialect, and Windows clients connecting to the same server speaking the non POSIX dialect.
Yes.
And where that becomes really important is read and write. So the interaction is between when Windows clients have a mandatory file lock and POSIX clients want to do read and write, you have to specify what those interactions should be. And that's the only important thing I can see that's not actively listed there.
And in fact, I mentioned that in a moment, and you hit on a key thing, and that is that it's an interaction and a rule rather than an explicit protocol visible operation.
That's right. Yeah. It's a server implementation.
You'll notice these are all wire visible operations.
Okay, got it.
Right?
Sorry.
And the rules are not wire visible. They are, you know, right. on the either end. And so there's a slight distinction that may or may not be important. I can take a bit. I want to reserve 5 minutes at the end for something a little special.
I didn't need to interrupt. I just didn't know.
Please do.
While we are there, access control list.
That's another. There's no explicit operation to manage ACLs required, I believe. But we have it in SMB2. So
it.
Okay, well, that's a good thing to discuss. I have lumped ACLs into another one of those rule-based ones. Out of scope, items not explicitly included above. Okay, if it's not on this list on the wire, it's currently out of scope. There's a very important reason for that. We're going into this with a very clearly defined scope so that everybody knows what they're signing on to. And in a moment, I'll show you something that we require a bit of a commitment from a contributor to contribute and stay in the game. And so if we change the scope partway through, we run the risk of losing contributors. So we need to be very careful about getting our scope right going in so that we can keep everybody through the process and produce the result we want to achieve. Okay? So right now, I will say they're not there, but let's talk if we need to put things there. And as I said, rules are fine. Bits on the wire are more difficult. Things that are externally visible in some clear way. Yes, in the back?
What about sparse files?
I don't know. Okay, that's wire explicit. We can talk about it. There are definitely Windows behaviors that affect sparse files, But I don't believe it's protocol dependency. Okay. Implementation is not in scope. We will produce only a document. We'll all take care of our implementations in our own time. Okay? We're not going to write code as part of this. I hope people will write code right afterwards, but we're not going to write code as part of this effort. The project will output a specification. It'll have a discussion, which will be an exchange of ideas, which we hope to capture and shape that specification. What's most important? Understand the approaches, and in particular, understand comparisons with NFS. Right? NFS kind of owns the POSIX network file sharing space, and SMB kind of owns the Windows, and SMB2 owns the Windows file sharing network space. There are going to be comparisons as we move POSIX functionality to SMB2. So we need to understand those. And consensus, a community willingness to advance and implement this effort, right? To actually take it out. That's an output of this effort, right? That's a key goal of the effort. Project structure is very simple. I'm the project coordinator. I don't rule. I'm not a czar, but I have the coordinator role, and that is to say I make sure that the people who've signed up have represented themselves appropriately, that they've executed all the necessary bits of agreement, that the consensus is reached, and that this special flag day occurs. I'll show you the flag day in a minute. But I will probably organize meetings and con calls if necessary. Contributors, we're recruiting them now. I'm not quite ready to take sign-ups, but the website administration, thanks to our partners at Ubix Computing, Chris and Jose, will be up and ready soon. I do have a website name, a website URL for you, but I don't actually have anything live at it right yet. So there's this little animal called the Contributors Agreement that everybody's going to have to take a look at. I've begun to socialize it with a couple of folks for some early comments, and so far so good. But it'll be ready for a wider view in probably a couple more days. The Contributors Agreement is something which companies and or individuals, it depends on your affiliation, will grant certain rights to your contributions to the project as you contribute, basically as you open your mouth and say something or send an email or produce a suggestion. You're contributing to the project. This is very much the IETF model, in which things you say in an IETF meeting are property, if you will, of the IETF. The IETF has rights in the things you say. But we're going a little bit further than the IETF agreement. We're saying you actually grant those rights prior to saying them. We tell you exactly, you know, the box around those rights. But you should read that agreement or perhaps have your legal people read it. It's very simple. Our goal in having this contributors agreement is key. It ensures that its use and that the document's use and the development of the specification is available to everyone. We want this to be free and open. We want everybody to share the same rights in the document. And so the contributors agreement is our way of guaranteeing that. You basically make the agreement going in, and that asserts the condition of the thing coming out. There'll be a final review process. It's currently 45 days at project completion to basically ratify the agreement with respect to these contributors' agreement-based rights as well. And it's really lightweight. It's a click-through. In effect, when you register at the website, you have to read it and click through it. You need to do more than that, obviously that's a matter for each person to decide, but the mechanics of accepting it is simply a click-through. So the commitment that we ask from contributors is basically just a willingness to contribute to the specification, to provide content, either ideas, experience, to write it or edit it. We're definitely going to need to do that because we're going to produce a document, and to review it to make sure it's accurate. Intention to implement it is not necessary, but I would love to see it implemented. I'd actually like to see it implemented while we're writing it as a test. And I expect to get lots of feedback from Samba if it's a success that you'll be implementing it, and we'll use that early implementation information to tell us whether it's right. It's basically once again the IETF model. You specify it, then you test it by doing it, and then you validate that the specification made sense before you ratify it. So communication is going to be simple. All discussions can take place via an email reflector. We might have face-to-face meetings or conference calls. We'll do those, you know, as the need arises and really as the opportunity arises. I'd certainly expect to do something at SNEA, at the SMB PlugFest at SNEA next September. And there's a Microsoft-hosted PlugFest that hopefully many companies or individuals might come to in just a couple weeks. So there's going to be a lot of other licensees of our protocols and, you know, Microsoft protocols and the like who are going to be there. So I'll be repeating this discussion with them in a couple of weeks. The website will host a wiki-style issues list with work in progress, etc. That'll be just, you know, a whiteboard that we can use as a project. We'll have a bug tracking system. We'll have some sort of source code management system to retain the document with revisions and the like. Very, very simple, I'm sure very familiar. I want to use familiar tools. Postings will be contributions and may be included in the specification. That's just the kind of standard reminder. Anytime you submit something to the project, it's part of the, could become part of the specification. But the discussions will also be available to the public to watch as we go. It'll be an open process. The public won't be able to contribute unless they actually sign on as a contributor, but they can watch, monitor, etc. Work in progress restricted to contributors. What I'm saying there is that there may be an area of the website that's private. Like, for instance, the list of contributors, right? We all want to know who we are. I don't think we want to tell everybody who we are necessarily. So we'll have a private area for that kind of exchange. So here's the schedule. I envision, personally, a 6 to 12-month effort. I cannot imagine doing this in less than 6 months. I would like to be done in a year. I'd actually like to be done in a little less than a year. But I think it's somewhere in that ballpark. Given the experience, given the maturity of the SMB2 specification, and given the scope of what we want to do, I think it's reasonable. I'm kicking off the project and recruiting now. The project work, I believe, will begin in about 2 or 3 weeks. I think it'll take us about that long to get the word out, to get enough people interested, to have the contributors agreement looked at, and, you know, more or less get a critical mass to get this thing started. So I'm just going to swag June 1st, and that seems practical to me, at least. I believe we'd be doing the specification development in the summer and fall. Obviously, the summer may have a few bumps with vacations and the like, but summer and fall, I think, line up well with the SMB PlugFest and with the other, you know, rhythms of the development community. I expect the specification to be complete after review and maybe a little bit of soak time, kind of let the implementations tell us if it's right. I would expect the specification to be complete in, quote, early 2011. I won't put a specific date on it, but, you know, sometime between the first of the year and a year from now, I would expect us to be done with what we do. And I just had a couple little milestones at the bottom. The red one is the Microsoft File Sharing PlugFest, and the olive one is the SNEA SMB PlugFest. So just a little food for thought. This is the kind of content that I think the first meeting would cover, in effect. These are just items which I think are important to understand and discuss. There are actually three of these slides. Unix UID, GID, and mode bits. That's already in the old. And Symlink support is in SMB2, which was not present in SMB. But are there any incompatible semantics? We should look at SMB2 Symlink support. Representation of special files. Are there new special files? Are there new interests? You know, how will we represent them? What will they be? Case insensitivity, case preserving attributes of file systems, what else are there? Character set, reserve file names, ACL, access control list, interoperability. This may or may not be a wire issue. Generally, to me, ACLs are not a wire issue. They're, if you will, a local storage issue and a local format issue. There is a huge task hiding under here if we choose to take it on. I would rather not take it on, because I don't think it's protocol, but I do think it's very important for interoperability in a wide scale. So this, I could think of this as a subgroup if it's interesting enough, for instance. Locking semantics, there's a ton hiding under locking, right? Is it advisory or mandatory? Do locks stack? Do they merge, split, and overlap when you lock a region and unlock part of the region, or lock an overlapping region? How are they described? Is it arranged as an offset? Does signed and unsigned make a difference? Does the behavior on close change? These are all differences between POSIX locks and Windows locks. And we have to work out what these mean as we move forward. Windows locking conflicts with POSIX apps. What if a POSIX app, which reads a file, encounters a mandatory lock? It didn't expect a mandatory lock. It doesn't really understand a mandatory lock, but its read just hung. So, or returned a funny error, right? And so working out those differences and how they behave, I think, will be important. That's a problem Manifest doesn't have, actually, right? So this will be an interesting one. Lock state recovery after a transport break. We'll probably have to define that, I think, with POSIX behavior. Inode number, other attributes, extended attributes. That's similar to ACL interop, but presence of extended attributes is maybe different from the payload like an ACL might be. More food for thought. Atomicity and replay. Elements in SMB2, there are very few atomicity replay issues in SMB2. It's mostly focused on the open create call. These new operations may or may not introduce new atomicity issues, so that's something to think through. Explicit POSIX errors, if they're not currently described in the SMB2 error set, do we need to explicitly return them? Or would it be easier to just define a whole new set of POSIX errors that could be returned under these extensions? Rename-delete semantics. How do you rename? How do you delete, right? In Windows, you open it, set a bit, close it, blah, blah, blah. In POSIX, you pretty much have an explicit unlink call. And how do they behave? What happens if the file's open? What happens if the file is open, I guess, is the most interesting one. StatFS payload, this is a favorite for Manifest. It's really hard to get this right because the block size is always important, or there's all kinds of information that can be gotten wrong. And defining well what you plug into StatFS is always important. Notify semantics with POSIX extension in effect. I have no idea if this will be an issue or not, but it worries me, right? The notify semantics and callbacks directory notify or for change notifies as well as for op locks. I'm sure POSIX will do something to mess that up, and we'll have to think that through. Read and write with POSIX locking. I guess I mentioned that before. Leases, the lightweight locking. Extended attributes. Didn't I already have that? Negotiate capabilities on a per mount basis. Do we want this as to be a server attribute or a per mount attribute? I don't know. POSIX flush equivalent restat. I always hate the way POSIX makes you flush flush the write buffers before you return attributes. Are we going to make this protocol do that? I guess we might have to, but I hate that. And the last one, food for thought number 3. Protocols are forever, right? Code can change. Protocols are forever. It's really, really, really important to get them right. It's really important to think them through and get them right before you get too far down the road. It's really hard to change them because once somebody starts speaking them, they might keep speaking that forever, right? They might become a legacy system who is always stuck at that time. And so you can't fix him, right? And so it's important that the protocol be sane. It doesn't have to be infinite or, take in everything, but it needs to be sane, and you need to get to that comfort point about the protocol. And so I'll observe that the IETF model is a proven model, right? First you specify it, then you implement it, then you go back from the implementations and decide whether your specification was accurate, right? You use that implementation experience, that loose consensus and running code, right, that the IETF uses. That running code step is critically important to getting the protocol right. And so I want to do that here. I want to try to compress it, right? I don't want to take 3 years like an IETF spec might to get to this point. But on the other hand, no cutting corners, let's leave that for the next release. Let's be sure we're leaving it for the next release if we make that choice. And so my call to action before I give up the 5 more minutes for one special message is here's our website. I didn't put www on it. I think we'll make it work either way. When the contributors agreement is up, you'll need to read it and agree to it in order to sign up. But it's very lightweight, and I encourage you to do so and contribute. So I'll take just a moment for questions, but I have one other thing that will probably stimulate other questions. So maybe I'll take one or two.
Yes. The transport encryption. Why lump this all together into the Unix extension? Seems like it's totally different.
It is totally different, but it's an important gap in SMB2. For one thing, NFS can encrypt, right? CURB5P is supported by most NFS v4 and up implementations today, a lot of NFS v3. And it's a gap in the protection as viewed by the Unix community. It's a typical feature that the Unix community has come to expect due to NFS Kerberos deployments. And so it's in effect an acceptance, an adoption gap. It is not a POSIX semantic, no. That's correct. But it's a Unix interoperability or a Unix expectation that we plan to close. It's also the first thing everybody mentions right after, you know, give me POSIX. They say, what about encryption? So it's very popular. It can't be ignored.
Okay, you said you wouldn't change the SMB2 specification, MSSMB2, but will there be an addition for anything that is required in order to support? So, for example, in MSSMB, we specify the range of
absolutely
of info levels. Okay.
Very good question. I do expect it to feed something back to MSSMB2. For instance, I am certain that somewhere in that document there's a very inconvenient must. Somewhere in that document, you know, there will be a must that will cause us grief, and we'll fix it. If it requires those kinds of, if you will, correction of oversight. Where, as Microsoft and as owner of the document, we're committed to correcting those oversights. Explicitly calling out from that document to the Unix extensions is not something we'll do. The extensions can point to the document won't point to the extensions. We don't like deadly embraces of protocols. Well, I just want to wrap up briefly with one statement while I have the floor. And that is, typically, each year, Microsoft gives a kind of a top of mind. And Thomas Fenning and Jim Pinkerton have done it in the previous years. And we just wanted to recap briefly what our top of mind was last year, and then add a few items for top of mind in this year coming up. Thomas, you want to just come up here? I think they stole our microphone. We had a second microphone. There we are.
Just use this one. Okay, so we've been traditionally doing this for the last two times, so I thought we'd do it again. And this is actually the slide I showed last year. And so these were the areas where we have been sort of thinking about, and I think we're doing relatively well on actually following through on what we say we're going to do. And on the documentation side, we have made a lot of progress, thanks to Chris. I mean, that was sort of the biggest contribution we got, getting that finally squared away. And fixing up the SMB1 and the SMB2 documents to actually take a dependency on that SIFS document, so you don't have to sort of try to guess all this stuff and try to figure out what's wrong in that document. So that looks a lot better. Now we can move on. And so a lot of the innovation, I think I mentioned that the last two times, for us the SMB1 protocol is pretty much done. And so a lot of the innovation going forward we plan to do on SMB2. So we're very pleased to hear that that implementation is coming along. The Unix interop and encryption stuff we're picking up now. And sort of the issues of compression, clustering, server workloads, and HPC lead us to the next slide. We're sort of in an interesting phase right now where, unlike sort of the Samba project, we have relatively fixed schedules that we don't control. And those is when the next version of Windows ship. So we have to snap to those. We can't sneak anything here or there. We're pinned down to what we can do. And so right now we're in between releases. We just released Win 7, Server 2008 R2. So we don't really have a plan yet, but we're looking at all sorts of things, trying to figure out what should be sort of our focus for the next release. So don't take anything on here as a committed feature or it will show up in Windows. None of that is true. It's just like when we go to work, what do we think about? One of the interesting trends in the industry that sort of caught up with us is virtualization. Everyone is virtualizing everything. And well, what's the storage subsystem for virtualization? Well, there's an interesting trend that we didn't predict in the VMware world, about 40-50% of those deployments are using NFS. Now, that's kind of interesting. Well, they made some changes to the protocol to support that, and there's quite like the lowest cost alternative. Well, we can't do that today really on SMB really well. So one of the things we were thinking about, hey, what would it take? What are the characteristics that you would have so that you could use SMB for a backing protocol for virtualization? So that's an interesting one. I'd love to get feedback from you guys, what you think about it. We spent a lot of time on branch, and we did an interesting thought experiment. So we released this capacity tool. I mean, you guys have been playing with that. You just basically look at the traces, and then you think, well, NFS has directory oplocks. What would happen if we would add directory oplocks to SMB? And just on a theoretical basis, well, it looks like you could save 30% of all packets. 30% less packets, like in a WAN environment, that looks like an interesting thing to potentially do. So we're looking into that and see what that does. Storage efficiency, so like that's where compression comes in. There's also lots of interesting things happening with regards to like deduplication. So the question is that an area that should actually extend into the file protocol? We don't know yet, but might be an interesting area to look at it. And then you guys have been moving ahead with clustering, but SMB was never designed to support clustering. So there's lots of the semantics that are not really well suited towards sort of clustering, obviously having distributed file systems. So we are spending some time thinking through, well, what changes would you want to make to SMB v2 to make it more cluster-friendly? That's also an area I'd be happy to to chat and get feedback. Like if you, like in your implementation of clustering in SMB came across some things, I'd love to hear about them. And then we have like some additional object store documentation to sort of capture the more of the NTFS semantic. And the file systems and the storage subsystems are changing pretty radically. Like traditionally, we have been thinking about spinning disks. Well, those times are gone. They're really gone. And so, like even if you do use fiber channel to an array today, sort of don't assume just because it looks like a disk, it has anything to do with a physical disk. But now that's actually moving local as well. So the latest generation of controllers is changing. It's disk caching, like SSD caching. How does it change, and what changes do we have to think through to make that really work well? So these are the things we're currently thinking about. And I think when we come back next year, we'll be a lot better prepared to talk about what actually made it into Win8 and sort of give you a heads up there. But for the time being, if you guys have like any specific feedback or want to chat to me about it, like in the hallways, please do. That's sort of what we're right now thinking about. Just thought I'd give you a heads up on that. If there's any questions to the overall talk, this is also a good time.
Yeah, I guess we still have 1 minute. Time for a question. Steve, were you looked like you were going to ask me something for a minute.
Maybe it's not quite as important. Now, these are very interesting to think about as well, thinking about them in terms of Unix extensions. I think my particular question was, you said the documents aren't self-referential and the one document doesn't refer to the other, but if for example, we had create context, they would. Because you'd have at least a reference to the name of the context.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. We'll be able to, well, it's arguable that you need to name that in SMB2 if it's only present in an extension, right? Maybe I don't completely understand the
example. What I'm thinking about is that there is value in realizing that a particular response commonly contains a set of optional values.
Yes.
Today you already do that in the MSSMB 2. You have in the description of open, you note a number of create contexts.
Yes.
There is value in saying we know about others in a behavior note, but they're not documented here.
Right.
Because part of what the
behavior
problem is...
Behavior notes are fairly easy to add.
Yeah. Part of what I'm
getting
at...
They are, by definition, non-normative.
Yeah. Part of what I'm getting at is that as an implementer, if something shows up in your server you've never seen before, this gives you a clue. Maybe you should expect it. Maybe you should go look for it.
Yeah, so this gets to the implementation experience and hints that I described. And, you know, where to capture them, I think, is a very valid question. And we're willing to consider it in the core SMB2 if it's most relevant there. My inclination would be to keep the extensions in the extension document and the core protocols in the core.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I'm not disagreeing. It, case by case, I think, is the best way to approach this.
Thank you very much for questions. Thank you very much for the speakers.
Thank you.